Jhené and Gola Jr., the podcast.
We're still here, which is about the only thing I can say about a few of the NFL teams we're getting ready to talk about. They're still here. We just haven't figured out if that's a good thing necessarily. It's Jhené Gola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and Sirius XM Channel 80, Mike Golic Jr. and Jhené Egbuamoke. And it was that kind of recon, right? Because, like, Jhené, you know this. Going into any season, there's a lot of expectations. You're coming off the offseason. Everyone's in the best shape of their career, and all the new coaches and their stars are singing kumbaya. And then you get to week one, and it is amazing how quickly the sky starts feeling like it's falling.
Oh, yeah, how everything turns. But I do think that the overall theme here is that teams really can struggle, I mean, out of the gates, just because this is such a unique environment in which they, you know, if you're in the professional ranks in football, it's hard to replicate that. Like in basketball, I remember when I was in quarantine, I went outside, did my ball handling. This was the first time I didn't really take contact for a long time, but it didn't feel too foreign. For football, I think we're starting to see how foreign it is to not have a normal offseason.
It's incredibly foreign, and what makes it, I think, an even more stark drop between what we saw from the haves, some of the best teams and the brightest teams in the NFL, and the have-nots, more discernible is this. This is an unbelievable stat when I saw this. Shout out to ESPN Stats and Info for pulling this one together. We obviously have two games left to go tonight. We'll have plenty to discuss about Pittsburgh and the New York Giants, who are getting ready to kick off at 7:15, and then the late game between Tennessee and Denver. But with two games left, the league-wide QBR is 60.3. That's the highest QBR in week one since 2006. Offenses are averaging 23 first downs a game. It's the most since 2001. So play has been up across the board, unless you're a fan of the New York Jets, the Cleveland Browns, or the, who am I blanking up on this one? The Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. Really, the New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns seem to be in a league of their own, but the Philadelphia Eagles have wandered, Jhené, into the cellar after a stunning loss in week one. But I want to start with the Jets on this one, because we look at this team, Jhené, Adam Gase, Sam Darnold, and this core, what they expected to be the best parts of their team, came out and once again fell flat. Now, I have a hard time pinning this one on Sam Darnold, but Jhené, you know this about every sport. The lights are awfully bright in the city of New York, and it seems like time after time now, this team going out against the, I guess, in-state, although technically everyone will let us know the Jets play in New Jersey, the in-state rivalry with the Buffalo Bills was a pretty lopsided, one-sided matchup for this Jets squad.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you see someone on the other side like, wow, we've been able to turn things around when we're the Bills. We have a lot to build towards. And then you're like, why can't we do it? And if we're going to talk about panic, like, I understand why the Jets fans probably are panicked right now, just because I think they're just fiending for some energy, fiending for some development. Now, I sort of personally had lower expectations, but maybe like it's how many years of low expectations with high hope hurts you after Jamal Adams leaves. And then was it CJ Mosley that opted out? So I was like, okay, they're probably going to struggle, but to struggle this bad. And you know what saves you when you're struggling? It's energy. And you know, you're not getting energy from the way that, you know, the season is constructed due to the virus. And then on top of it, you need coaching, right? Coaching can help. And that seems like the number one thing that's of question, because nothing's worse than having a young talent and hopefully a young quarterback that you believe in, you know, Sam Darnold, and then not being able to develop him in the most needed time. And I think that's something that we looked from the offseason, like, look, the time is now for us to see the benefits of, you know, having coaching in a relationship and that development. And it just did not happen.
Yeah, and it hasn't happened there. And the offense has been stagnant. They failed to bring in a number of weapons. I know they drafted Mims out of Baylor, but ultimately you look around that team and it's devoid of anything that's been consistent, especially on the offensive side. And unfortunately, it looks like you might squander the best and most affordable years of Sam Darnold's career and maybe instill some pretty bad habits. Our own Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will and Zubin, was on this morning and pointed the finger squarely at Adam Gase.
He shouldn't have been hired here in the first place. He just shouldn't have. He hasn't given anything that looks like hope. I understand they got into a six-game run at the end of the year and all that, but the players are not warm to him. It just doesn't – it's not a good fit. I'd go and strip New England and grab Josh McDaniels and give him everything in the world that he wants. Come, run the team, run the organization. I'll roll like that. I'm going to take some out of the division. I'm going to handicap New England and grab that dude and bring him here. That's what I would do.
Chinay and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Coming up in about 10 minutes, if you thought the first quarterback meeting in the Green Bay Packers quarterback room was awkward, I have a much more uncomfortable Wisconsin-related meeting that took place today that we got to get around to. But let's switch from the Jets to the Browns on this one, because, Chinay, if I'm looking to fire off the panic meter, and that is something that apparently we can do around here because we just type panic meter.
Wait, how panicked are you on the Jets, though?
On the Jets, like you said, I'm not ultimately that panicked there because the expectations were so low to begin with. I don't think that this Jets core and this coaching staff are going to be there for the long term.
I agree, and I think that this is time for Jets fans to at least temporarily find a side piece team.
There we go. Sound advice from someone who is also the Houston Texans fan in the show, found herself a side piece team or two in the New England Patriots and the Arizona Cardinals. So no panic meter there, but Chinay, I might be getting ready to officially fire it for this next team.
Panic meter.
And again, we did not have that specially made. I have no idea where it came from. We just typed it into the computer and found it. So, but for the Cleveland Browns, because we know they brought head coach Kevin Stefanski over from the Minnesota Vikings, and that is a move made, making moves brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. I am destroying English today. Similar to the way that the Browns kind of destroyed offense this weekend, Chinay, because it just looked completely out of sync for them over the course of that afternoon. Obviously, they're playing the Baltimore Ravens, so we didn't expect them to go out here and win this, but to be that out of sync for a team that has so many weapons, you know what it did look like, Chinay? You had so many mouths to feed on that offense, and so many great players with Odell, with Jarvis Landry, Kareem Hunt, and Nick Chubb. It seemed like they didn't know who they wanted to be because they have too many options of who they can be.
Exactly. It's sort of the same question that I think we keep hearing time and time in Dallas. It's like super talented team, but they have to stick to what they like, you know, and it's through Zeke and the run. But I think when you have so many weapons on the outside for this Browns team, it's, and also not just weapons, it's egos, right? Like players that are confident and like to puff out their chest, you start deferring like, oh, I need to make sure spreading myself a little too thin. And I don't think that's helped Baker at all. But mostly, I'm sorry, I'm mad because I played fantasy. And I was so excited because everyone loved my lineup in my roster. And Chubb let me down. He let me down in my matchup. Granted, I think he was going against, McCaffrey. So I knew that was going to be a tall task, but I like literally only got, had like 20 less points on the matchup, and that really did it for me. Christopher Mitchell beat me in fantasy for the first week. I was so mad. But yeah, I think that's the idea here, that like you have to spread the ball, spread the love so thin that it's hard for them to figure out an identity.
Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield talked about this being on all three phases, not executing.
I would say just the momentum of, you know, that's, you know, where the good teams, they don't let one mistake turn into a bunch. They don't let it kind of go throughout the whole team. They can nip it in the bud and move forward, you know, fix their mistakes. So we can do that. We know that. We practice on doing those things. So we just have to be better next time. There's no way around it. No excuses. We just have to be better.
The problem with this, Chinay, is this seems like exactly what we saw from the Browns last year. And I think the hope with Kevin Stefanski coming over was, all right, you know what? We can blame all of this stuff on Freddie Kitchens. We can say he's out the door and now it's all new. But a lot of the same problems protecting Baker Mayfield, some of the same problems getting on the same page with Odell Beckham Jr., who remains on a milk carton in this offense, unfortunately. It just reeks of familiarity. And for Cleveland, kind of like we talked about with Detroit before, they don't need any reminders of where they've been. They know.
Also, like, if we're going to talk about panic, if you look, think of the AFC North, like, we're going to see the Steelers, and they're going to be better because Big Ben is back. Ravens, loud. We all talk about, I mean, you've been talking about Lamar all day, about how he's just playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers. And then the Bengals were, like, one kick away from looking even better than before. So if I'm a Browns fan, I am panicked.
Chinay and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. So panic certainly setting in for the Browns there. But for Carson Wentz and the Eagles, I don't know if I'm ready to hit the panic switch yet, Chinay, just because this division, when you looked at the Cowboys' opening performance, certainly the team they played in Washington, and what we're going to wait and see from the New York Giants, Joe Judge's first game as the head coach of that team, coming up later against the Steelers, I think this is going to be a division where everyone is kind of bunched in around each other, unfortunately. And so I'm not going to hit the panic switch yet, but man, when Dan Orlovsky, the first and foremost supporter of Carson Wentz at this network, is coming and publicly calling out their quarterback for some of the mistakes he made, taking care of the football, but also taking care of himself, it's got to be a bit concerning to a lot of people involved. Carson Wentz talked about what happened today for the Philadelphia Eagles and sound that we don't have and I don't have on my board. So, Chinay, are you worried about this team?
I am worried, but I want to give you some love because you always think about the offensive linemen and the O-line. Like, how would you – is it – like, how many sacks did Wentz take?
I think it was eight.
Yes, eight sacks. Like, I mean, it's not easy to feel comfortable and perform. So I am panicked if I'm with the Eagles, but I don't know. I hate saying all this because it's still early and you can learn a lot of lessons early, but it just seemed like one of those situations where they just combusted and they created a lot of the problems for themselves.
They did, and it seemed to happen all towards the second half. On the other side of that, and while we're worried about teams that might be hitting the panic switch here, the Philadelphia Eagles were supposed to be right there with the Dallas Cowboys as two teams. If Carson Wentz is finally healthy, has healthy weapons around him, which wasn't the case already, Lane Johnson on the inactive list going into this one was supposed to be able to take the horns and the reins of this division. But on the other side, got to give a lot of credit to what we saw from the Washington football team there.
Yes.
And we know everything that they've had to battle through, everything that their coach has had to battle through on this one to find a way to pull that game out. He gets the game ball at the end of that one, was a tremendously touching situation.
Yeah, especially at halftime, hearing that he had an IV just so he had enough energy to make sure to make it through the second half. So yeah, you know, kudos to Coach Rivera.
Yep, Ron Rivera battling through chemo treatments, finding a way there. Dwayne Haskins taking the reins at halftime, but ultimately, Ron Rivera, who's had to wear so many hats for this organization during the offseason, getting a win that I think everyone certainly looks at and says is well-earned on a variety of fronts right there. All right, coming up next, we'll touch on it. We had a Game 6 that forced Game 7 happen yesterday in the NBA, and that's still not the most exciting thing that happened in the association in the last 24 hours. We'll tell you about one of the most important meetings in sports next. It's Shanae Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Shanae Angola Jr., the podcast.
Some big news coming out of the state of New York. Really, New York City. Shanae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. That singing you hear, that dancing in the streets, might be due to a major announcement we got out of Major League Baseball. Billionaire Steve Cohen reached an agreement today on Monday to take majority ownership of the New York Mets. My God, the Wilpon family no longer as the mainstay and controlling parties of the New York Mets. Shanae, you know this. I mean, New York's no stranger to questionable ownership there. Certainly, people over are looking longingly at the Knicks, wondering if something like this might be possible, or at least getting some relief here today on the other side of the street.
Yeah, it just feels like a new day, but my mind just went to like, oh snap, J-Lo, A-Rod, who had to break the call to them and let them know that they didn't win out, because these are two people that are used to winning. But yeah, if you're a fan of the Mets, like, yeah, you feel pretty good because now maybe it's a new age and things can just work out a little bit better, contrary to, like, you know, the other teams in your state. So,
well, and I think people are kind of used to this on the national level. We talk about so much, but anytime you get closer and closer to the coverage around a team, people just point up. They always point up because bad teams stay bad for a long time because of the ownership involved. And so I'm sure there is a lot of hope springing eternal now that new ownership and a new perspective and new pocketbooks might finally drive some change there. It's Shanae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get to talk to the new voice of Monday Night Football, Steve Levy, going to be joining us as he gets ready for the call late tonight, Tennessee and Denver in the Monday Night doubleheader. We know the crew before, Maria Taylor, Chris Fowler, and our own Kirk Herbstreit going to be manning the helm for the Giants and Steelers game in that one. So we're delighted to be talking to him soon. But we got to get to a couple of other things going on here, because we saw this weekend the cross-section between college football and the NFL. We know a very big meeting took place in Milwaukee, and it's all going to be a part of One and Done. So, Cliff, let's get to it.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and Done.
This show is now collectively stuttering as much as I have today, which is important.
It's true. It's okay. But we'll hold it down. We'll hold it down. And should we start with the meeting?
We should start with the meeting. Let's go ahead and start with the meeting.
All right. Well, let's talk about this big meeting that happened in Milwaukee. I mean, will the real MVP... Look at me stuttering. Will the real...
I'm taking everyone down with me today. It is destruction here, courtesy of Mike Golick Jr.
It's contagious. It's almost like a yawn. Like, you see one person yawn and then it just starts spilling over. What I was trying to say is, will the real MVP please stand up? Please stand up. I am talking about Giannis Ugo Antetokounmpo. You know I have a sweet spot for Nigerians, especially Niger in the sports world. While the spotlight has really started to shine on Giannis, especially in the postseason, the good, Giannis is likely to be named soon as the MVP. The bad, things are getting real in Milwaukee. Now, after a disappointing exit in the playoffs, Giannis just recently met with the owner, the ownership, Mark Lazary, to start talking about the franchise and the future. And you see, Milwaukee will offer Giannis Antetokounmpo a supermax deal worth approximately, I believe, 35% of the salary cap, the Bucks salary cap, which nets out around like $220 million. But I think we're all starting to sense what we sort of called here early on. He's going to have to decide whether he wants to continue to be the franchise guy or decide to wait it out and become an unrestricted free agent after next season. You know, the pressure is on, so much so that we are reading into what he does on social media and who he unfollows on Twitter and on Instagram. Now, on Twitter, he only follows his family, his girlfriend, and the account of our late idol, Kobe Bryant. On Instagram, Giannis follows his family, his girlfriend, and an account for his dog, which I think you'd totally approve of, right? The Bucks, though, overall, like, they're feeling the pressure. I think we can't read into who he follows or unfollows. It's more so about no distractions for him because of the disappointing end of the playoffs. But big picture here is that Giannis is the most valuable player, right? Who's soon expected to become the third player in NBA history to win the league's MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. Now, in the words of Brian Windhorst, this was a meeting, but not the meeting. The next few weeks will decide a lot for the Bucks, especially with how they construct a team that Giannis believes in. But this is a meeting where it will soon be the meeting that determines Giannis's future, the future of the franchise, and also the future of the NBA, especially in free agency if he becomes available.
It has got to be tense times around there. And Shanae, we know this. We've seen this happen before with plenty of franchises. As you stare at small market teams, we talk about it all the time, towards the oblivion and the cliff that potentially happens when your superstar gets ready to leave town. I can't imagine what the feeling was like when Russell Westbrook, the last remnants of that old Oklahoma City core, walked out of town, because you just never know what's on the other side.
Think about it. When you have a relationship and your significant other is like, oh, I think we're going to break up, you're like, no, it's the last stand. I promise I'm going to lose the weight. I'm going to do so much better. I promise I'll be better to your parents. Like, I feel like we're at that point where these promises are being made. We'll see how you deliver on them, Milwaukee.
Promises?
But I will say, though, Mark Lazary, I'm impressed by him because I've worked the Celebrity All-Star Game for the last 2 years, and he was hooping in it. He's willing to do whatever it takes to show that he is invested in his team and his franchise. I don't remember him getting too many buckets, maybe like one or two, but still, I think that's interesting. What about you? What's on your mind?
Listen, we'll get to what's on my mind in a little bit here, because we got some things coming up with college football and the dichotomy between what we saw on that level and the NFL level that reinforced some of the problems that we knew were there all along. But coming up next, I'm excited because we mentioned new Monday Night Football booth is getting ready to debut. We will talk to the man at the helm for the late game tonight. We'll do it next here on Shanae and Golic Jr. after this word from TuneIn. See, as you get the NFL season underway, make sure you're ready everywhere you go with TuneIn and ESPN Radio. Hear in-depth analysis of your favorite team all season long. Plus, fuel your football fandom by listening to ESPN's biggest football podcast on the TuneIn, including the Adam Schefter podcast, Fantasy Focus Football, and the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Download the free TuneIn app and start listening today. Back after this, it's Shanae and Golic Jr.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Will it be a fluke year two for the Tennessee Titans core? We'll find out and get that answer tonight. It's Shanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, like our next guest, the new voice of Monday Night Football, Steve Levy, with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And the Monday Night Football kickoff is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Steve, getting ready. It's a new booth. You guys are a new team getting ready to embark on a couple of other teams going on here. How are you feeling personally going into tonight?
I'm ready to go. Like, I can't wait for my first booth challenge, you know, a holding penalty or something. You know, I mean, we've been talking about, you know, Monday Night Football, the booth, and all that. And I imagine we're feeling the same way at the Broncos and the Titans are going. You're so revved up that you watched the whole league play yesterday, and as if that's not enough, you have to be the second game on Monday Night Football. So I think everybody's revved up and ready to go. And obviously, you know, not going to have the full crowd. We'll have 500 fans, friends and family tonight in attendance. But, the city of Denver loves the Broncos. I think it's really one of the maybe top 5, top 3 fan bases in the whole league. So everybody here is ready to go.
Steve, can you give us a preview of what to expect, especially early on with this matchup?
Yeah, I think it's a dandy matchup. I look at the Titans really the hottest team from the postseason. Obviously, they didn't go all the way, but you know, Kansas City had expectations. So Tennessee, the way they rolled through the postseason, I mean, New England, at Baltimore, they found themselves, they found their confidence and their personality, and they got even better. Right, if they had one shortcoming, it was probably getting after the passer. They get Vic Beasley, who can rush the quarterback, but he's not going to play tonight. And then a week ago, they signed Jadeveon Clowney, who can, you know, blow up every play he wants to. So that's, you know, they come in flying high, you know, based off of last season and the offseason. And I would maintain the Broncos had a great offseason. Certainly the drafting of Jerry Jeudy and K.J. Hamler. We're not sure Hamler's going to play tonight, but Jeudy was so explosive at Alabama. They feel really good about Drew Lock here. They might be overstepping, but they are hanging their cowboy hats out here on that 4-1 finish. You know, the lights weren't on. You were out of the playoffs already, but Denver did finish 4-1, so that left them with a really good feeling. You know, the only down, it's a big down. It's, you know, it's no Von Miller, it looks like, it'd be for the entire season. So they'll have to figure out a way to overcome that. But that's pretty much our entire open for Monday Night Football, so everybody can tune in just for the kickoff now.
Talking to Steve Levy, the voice of Monday Night Football. He'll be alongside Brian Griese, Lewis Riddick, and, of course, Lisa Salters manning the sideline on that one. You mentioned Von Miller as one pass rusher there, but you also brought up Jadeveon Clowney, that acquisition in Tennessee. As you guys have talked to these staffs, talked to these teams, how much are they expecting early on from Jadeveon Clowney coming in so late in training camp, obviously a late signing there in week one in this matchup?
You know, I got to be respectful when I say this, but I think coming in, you know, a week before the season, before the first regular season game, is much easier for a defensive player than it would be for an offensive player. I know there's a game plan, there's X's and O's on the defensive side, but for a guy like Clowney, an edge rusher who just blows plays up, you know, it's almost sea ball and attack ball. And so I think the Broncos are really concerned about that. One of Denver's issues, we'll see if they've shored it up this season, but has been an inconsistent offensive line. You know, that Garrett Bowles, who could see an awful lot of Clowney coming off the edge. I think Bowles led the NFL in holding penalties the last 3 years. So he just presents so many different problems. And this Broncos offense is really young and inexperienced. I think the average age on the offense is like 24. Pat Shurmur's here, he's a veteran coach, obviously, with the Giants, but first year here in Denver. And, you know, he's got a really, really young offense to work with. And there'll be some opening night jitters, too, I think. But that's, you know, that sets up. I mean, that Tennessee defense will really go after the offense of the Broncos. And, listen, Denver did some stuff, too, in this offseason, right? So they had Philip Lindsay. He's a dynamic player in the backfield. What do? They add Melvin Gordon, who's a proven player coming over from the Chargers. So. And we haven't even talked about Derrick Henry, the returning top rusher in the NFL. So the stars will be out tonight, the nightcap for Monday night.
Yeah, and speaking of stars, what about the quarterback, especially Ryan Tannehill? I know he's probably coming in feeling pretty confident, but what are the realistic expectations for him, especially this year where he's got a couple boosts on both ends of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question, and I think that's an unknown. His his passer rating for his career was like 88. And last year it was like 117, and it was the best in the National Football League. So it's sort of, you know, which Ryan Tannehill are we going to get? Tannehill's a fabulous story, really, and when you think about it. He's a guy's a wide receiver at Texas A&M. They convert him to quarterback late, comes in. You're the eighth pick overall. You go to Miami. You're the hero there. Start to fall out of favor. Start getting booed a little bit. Have a serious injury. Shipped out. You're a backup to Marcus Mariota. And then, and really, his fortune and the Titans' fortune, they are linked together from last year, and it happened right here, which is remarkable. Week six here, the Broncos shut out the Titans 16-0, and that's when Mariota hit the bench for good, and Tannehill took over from that point on. So I think his teammates really respect him. He's been very strong, obviously on the field, but off the field in terms of social justice. He's really rallied with the guys, and they've rallied around him. And he's a real likable guy, and he's got a great story. He has experienced just about everything you can experience in the National Football League, the highs and the lows. And he says it's made him a better man for it.
Talking to Steve Levy with us here on Chiné Ngolick Jr. And alongside him in that backfield will be the man that you mentioned, the leading rusher in the NFL from last year, Derrick Henry, the proud owner also of a new contract. And Steve, we've heard the debate about paying running backs in 2020 and what the modern NFL looks at with that position. As you talk to this team, what's the sense that you got for Derrick Henry and what they expect from him now going forward? And if he can keep up this pace and the amount of touches they've put on a guy who is certainly one of the bigger, more formidable backs in football.
And some of that will play out tonight, guys, because Tennessee will be without their backup running back. They had a rookie they really liked a lot, and he's banged up and injured, not going to be able to go tonight, Darrington Evans. So that might put even more pressure on Henry to carry the football. He's an amazing physical specimen, and you could make the argument, and I went through some comparisons, he might be the tallest, biggest, fastest back to ever play in the NFL when you combine all those things. And it's a great argument in the bar. You know, think about, you know, Christian Okoye, Earl Campbell, you know, Eric Dickerson, Eddie George, Bo Jackson, like all these big, fast backs. But none of them were as big or as tall or as fast combined, I think, as Derrick Henry. So there's no question. Tannehill lives off the play action, and that means making Henry available because, you know, there's no selling the play action if Henry's not able to do what he did last season. So that is the single biggest key to this Tennessee offense. They're also very good up front. They got a lot of tools, a lot of weapons, but if you had to single out one player on the offense, there's no question it's Derrick Henry, and he gets better, guys. He was, you know, he led the league in rushing anyway, but by far and away better in the second half. And when I say second half, I don't mean the second half of the season. I mean the second half of games. So either he is getting stronger or he's just wearing down opposing defense in that second half because he's so tough to bring down.
6'3", 238, Junior.
That's a big one. I stared eye to eye with that man at the Heisman Trophy ceremony the year that he won and was terrified. That should not happen with running backs, but it does with a freak like that.
And fast, too, right? I mean,
wild.
If he gets going, what are you going to do with that? Nothing. It's a business decision.
You're going
right?
to move out of the way.
I was going to say, you make yes, those business exactly. decisions, and it's an easy, easy decision. Easy decision to stay up and watch Steve and the group in the booth for Monday Night Football, Titans and Broncos. Steve, we appreciate the time. Have a great call tonight.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys, and happy for you guys with the new show. Keep it up. We'll be listening.
Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate that. That is the Monday Night Free Preview. It is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs for progression, protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. I'm trying to figure out what to blame it on, Chiné, and I think it's the donuts that you sent here.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. You're probably seeing double by now because you ate probably a double portion as well.
I am coming off of the football weekend from heaven that has sent shockwaves through my body. I had enough donuts to feed a small army on my own on Sunday, and we come in here with the surprise from our very own Chiné Ngolick on Victory Monday. So no
I just hope
surprise.
Y'all demolish them all.
Listen, ESPN Radio does one thing well, and that is scavenge and destroy food that is put in its hallway. So we have learned that. Remember, everyone, tune in tonight. Steelers-Giants at 7:15 on ESPN. That's going to be Herbie Fowler and Maria Taylor on that one. And then the nightcap of Titans-Broncos starting at 10:10 on ESPN with, again, Brian Griese, Lewis Riddick, Steve Levy, and Lisa Salters. Coming up next, though, Ezekiel Elliott wants to get fed. Pau Gasol making a big-time statement with one of his very own and plenty more energy for us to keep. We'll do
should
that
Should I keep
next.
My shirt down? Yeah, I should.
I think I definitely should. That's next on Chiné Ngolick Jr.
Chiné Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
Chiné Ngolick Jr. reminding you to tune into Bloodlines, a three-part podcast written and told by ESPN's Wright Thompson that examines the world of thoroughbred horse racing. Download, subscribe, and review Bloodlines, available wherever you get your podcasts. It is Chiné Ngolick Jr., Mike Ngolick Jr., and Chiné Ngolick. And Chiné, it has been a whirlwind weekend. You experienced yesterday, really for the first time, you got Sunday ticket locked and loaded, fantasy football lineups ready to go, the black hole that becomes your NFL Sundays.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't prepared. You should have, like, sat me down and gave me, like, orientation. Like, Chiné, okay, I know you're on the West Coast. 10 a.m. is the start, but maybe wake up earlier, you know, eat, rest a little bit, not, like, just wake up and lock in and then realize you can't blink until 10 p.m., 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
it be like that, not sometimes, pretty much every time. So just get used to that. Your Sundays are gone now. They belong to the NFL. They belong to that,
they belong to the streets.
As Scott Hansen says, 7 hours of commercial-free football, and Lord, it is glorious, as is the energy that we saw from a number of different athletes over the weekend. We got a lot to get to. We got a little time. So, Cliff, if you don't mind. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
And Janae, with so much going on over the weekend, especially in the sport of football that we know reigns supreme so much in this country, we did have some really incredible news in some other sports, and that started in women's tennis. The U.S. Open, Naomi Osaka goes out there and claims a U.S. Open title. She has been obviously stellar for so many, and stellar not only on the court where she has been such a rising young star, but off the court in the way that she's chosen to use her voice and her platform to help in the fight against social injustice in this country.
Absolutely. In the round before, we saw Serena go up against Victoria Azarenka, and both of them were the first time on Arthur Ashe to be moms competing, which was cool. You know, another history nugget there. But this was Naomi's time. And she also dropped a bar on Twitter that I will read. I would like to thank my ancestors because every time I remember their blood runs through my veins, I'm reminded that I can't lose. Like 50K retweets on that. She's in her bag. But most importantly, she's playing with a purpose. And it's nice to see a young person who sort of, you know, made her statements by not even talking, get what she wants and everyone else talking about what matters most.
Yes, I can say she has taken firm hold. It's amazing the sense of self that we see from young athletes who recognize the opportunity they have. And we talked about so many of the NFL teams that were demonstrating this weekend are choosing not to be on the field, maybe because of the sheer volume, so many games being played at once. Naomi Osaka knows she's been one of the main draws. She was the only show in town for this, and she used that platform to make sure that people were going to hear what she had to say.
Also, keep that same energy, Mariah Carey, who dropped her single right before that final series. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah, I could say, speaking of bars.
Oh my gosh, sampling the Fugees, Killing Me Softly in the song. Go check it out as well.
Everyone, make sure you check that out. Things I wasn't ready to see this weekend, though. I'm a man.
Oh, I was. I was.
I fully support midriffs. On men, I have no problem with the crop top, the short jersey, everything that comes with it. I was not ready for Zeke Elliott's new debut. That had been a look that he had made very popular. I was not ready for the feed me belly tattoo from Zeke Elliott. Janae, I don't know if you saw that in the Cowboys nightcap against the Rams, but Zeke, after getting in the end zone, pulled up and debuted a brand new addition to his lower tummy.
But it makes sense, right? It's on his tummy, so he wants to get fed. But I'm just going to leave it there because if you think, like, what? Like, come on now. You're not going to only be playing football when people are going to see that.
I saw the immediate volley, and this is something that, as a heavily tattooed person myself, you hear a lot of, well, what's that going to look like when he's 65? None of us care. We're all going to be old, fat, and stretched out with our weird-looking tattoos when we're chilling around on the porch as old people there.
And he's going to be like, I'm a Hall of Famer, so goodbye.
I'm going to say, you know what? He'll be doing it happily, looking down going, man, at one point I had a rock solid set of abs and I was showing them off on national TV and it was cool, and we'll all be in the same boat together later on. I appreciate the attention to detail of adding the spoon to that, though, from the famous video of Zeke. Obviously his feed me mentality and that celebration for first downs, well known and well documented.
I think it's cool, but I do think that he's gonna look down and be like, oh, how do I cover this up? Or it's gonna be interesting.
We stand with our tummy tattooing king.
Yeah, and at least it makes sense when it's on the stomach and it says feed me, it makes sense. It's quite literal. But one thing that I really love that made a lot of sense considering that they were friends, Pau Gasol and his wife had a daughter, and they chose to name her Elizabeth Gianna Gasol. Obviously the middle name Gianna is in honor of Gigi, his long teammate, a guy he's won championships with, the legend, the idol. And to me, that was a beautiful ode to Kobe on the same weekend where we saw Naomi Osaka, of course, also rock Kobe's jersey and said that that gave her strength. So Kobe, we miss you. And I thought that was a beautiful touch because Kobe's wife, Vanessa, is also the godmother of Elizabeth Gianna, which I thought was really nice.
I can say she had a great response on the Instagram post. My goddaughter is here. Congratulations to Pau and Kat. Love you three so much. So touched by your request to honor my Gigi. Can't wait to hold Elizabeth Gianna Gasol. So a very touching moment there for that family that has grown now in one. And a congratulations certainly to Pau and his wife on that one. So, all right, we can exhale now. It has been a mad dash, Janae, through the NFL weekend, the first NFL weekend of the season. You feeling all right? You feeling good?
I feel good. I will bounce back in fantasy, but I'm excited, yes.
You will bounce back in fantasy.
Part of the NFL family. I'm here for it.
We don't get to rest at all, by the way. Monday night doubleheader coming up tonight that we are looking forward to here. Hannibal Buress going to hang out with us on the show tomorrow, as well as a couple of great NFL names as we look back on the weekend. That was. Everybody enjoy Monday Night Football tonight. Spain and Fitz up on ESPN Radio next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.